Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going on, people of the internet? Welcome back to another episode of the Waveform Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Marquez.
And I'm Andrew.
And I'm fresh back from the Met Gala.
Yeah.
All 3 hours of sleep I got were great. And today's episode, we got a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to talk about the full specs of the Subaru Solterra, just because they're conversation worthy, I think.
That's a nice way of putting it, for sure.
But there's also some Twitch rumors floating around that might be very consequential to Twitch partners. And also, we have some updates on the F-150 Lightning, and I also have some future stuff we want to talk about. But then, we'll always wrap up with some trivia, like we have always, not always done, but like we've started doing, I think it's super fun.
But I also think, like, you can't just throw the Met Gala out there and not, like, elaborate a little bit. That's a flex.
You know what? Sure. Let's just go. Yeah. That'll be my story time for this episode. We've done so much tech stuff, but yeah, I was at the Met Gala on May 2nd, which was
no big deal.
You know, pretty fish out of water, as I would describe it. So the way it was sort of broken down is the Met Gala, for those who are unfamiliar, is a sort of fashion event fundraiser in New York City.
Yeah.
But it's become like the Super Bowl of fashion events, basically.
For sure.
So anytime you see it happen, basically, I don't really follow the fashion world that much. And then once in a while on Twitter, I see everyone's craziest outfits. And I'm like, oh, the Met Gala happened. Mm-hmm. And that's like once per year, basically. They took a year off after the pandemic. Then there was a couple months ago, they did a pre-Met Gala or something like that. But then we're back in 2022. And like 2 weeks before, I got an email from Derek Blasberg. He's the head of fashion at Google and YouTube, and was like, hey, do you want to go to the Met Gala? I was like, I guess that sounds fun. I looked up in the past, like, have YouTubers gone to the Met Gala before? And there have started to be a few. It's kind of like, I actually kind of relate it to Apple events. Remember the earliest days of Apple events where there actually weren't any YouTubers at them?
Yeah.
And I was actually the first YouTuber that was invited to an Apple launch event. And now, not to take credit, but now they've realized that that's a good idea. Mm-hmm, and now there are YouTubers at every tech event, especially with Apple events. There was tons of us there. So I looked it up. There have been a couple of YouTubers in the past that have gone to Met Galas. Typically, though, they're in the fashion industry. So as a tech creator, I was a little bit confused. I started reaching out to some YouTube friends, like, did you get an email about a Met Gala? Did you get an email?
Yeah.
Nobody else had gotten one, but I texted Mark Rober. Mark Rober also got an invite, and we were both a little confused about if we should go or not, but we did both decide to go. We were like, we'll be fish out of water together. We'll just go do the thing.
Works better that way, yeah.
Yeah, so we had each other's back. It was very interesting, as you can imagine an event like that would be. I will say, Derek is clearly a legend. Like, I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but if I could do my first Met Gala all over again, I would not rather have any other host than Derek Blasberg.
He
walks into the place and literally immediately, it was like his birthday the week before, and people are like, oh, it's Derek, what's up, man? Happy birthday, good to see you. I think we got to the red carpet, which is how everyone gets into the event. And I think I stepped out of our van for 15 seconds, and immediately Hugh Jackman's like, "Derek, man, what's going on?" Shakes his hand. He shakes my hand. "Hi, I'm Hugh." "Hi, Hugh. I'm Marquez." Like,
"Hi, I know who you are."
Yeah, I know. But you know, there's all the who's of, I guess, fashion, and you see celebrity and musicians and things like that. And there's mm-hmm. a theme, and everybody wears an outfit according to the theme, which was a little bit interesting. I think people saw the theme, which was gilded fashion, something, something.
American, yeah.
American fashion. I think people saw the word gilded and thought, oh, you need to have gold. That's not what the theme was. The theme was, it was from the gilded age of fashion, yeah, yeah. which was this golden age of like new wealth coming to the US. This is like the early 19th century, mid 19th century. And then, yeah, there's like an extra like American on top of it.
Look
so.
At you, fashion icon over here.
Well,
look,
I was educated
careful.
On
this
it.
Podcast is going to be a fashion podcast, and Hiato is going to take my space.
Yeah, no, this was, I don't know if I'll ever go back to another Met Gala, but this was quite an experience I'll remember for a long time. Lots of people are like, "Who did you meet? Who was the cool outfits?" I met a lot of people. A lot of them were very nice. My number one thing that I think I'll take away from going to the Met were, number one, I realize everyone how tall and short everyone is, because on okay. TV and like in acting and music videos, I guess I never really think
it's
too hard about the context of like, oh, Venus Williams is super tall. I didn't know that. I looked it up after she walked by me. On Google, it said she's 6'1". I don't believe that. Either she's like 6'3",
really?
And wearing huge heels, or she's like 6'6".
Wow.
Because she is definitely taller
awesome.
Than me. Erykah Badu is very tall. Hillary Clinton's not very tall.
Hugh Jackman's not the tallest, right?
Hugh Jackman's tall.
Okay.
I think he's my height.
Was he? Okay.
Yeah. So that was the one thing I got out of it. And then I got that, you know, Derek knows everyone. Hillary Clinton walks up to him.
Yeah.
"Derek, happy birthday, man." Katy Perry. "Derek, happy birthday." Literally everyone we walked by. We were walking in the streets of New York City after the Met to one of the like Instagram after parties. And literally a car driving by on Fifth Avenue, window rolls down. "Derek, man, how's it going?" So that was my Met Gala experience.
Well, at the Instagram after party, were all the celebrities wondering why there's no iPad app? No, that wasn't
no,
topic of conversation.
There wasn't really any sort of string of, there was very little tech to talk about.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way.
I do have to say, you said that might be your last event. I vote you keep going if you're invited until you meet Taylor Swift, and then, you know, then you're allowed to stop going.
Fair.
Cool.
Okay.
All right.
That's fair. I'll keep
Thank
going.
Thank you. I appreciate
yeah.
you.
I'll go. I'll definitely go if Mark goes again. I think we had a good, you know, eye-opening time. So shout out to Mark Rober. Also, we suited up. Obviously, I wear a tux. I posted the picture about how it was matte black everything. I got so much heat about how the shoes didn't look matte black. I'll tell you, in the photo, they didn't look matte black because compared to fabric,
mm-hmm.
you know, matte black leather doesn't look as matte black as fabric, but the shoes were matte black. And to prove it, look at me in any picture with anyone else's shoes, and their shoes are way shinier. I'll put a separate picture up of the shoes. They're matte black leather, just so you know.
This is very important.
The lights just hit different.
Yeah.
I just have to be sure Marquez we're on
doesn't
the same
lie.
Page.
Yeah.
So matte black bow tie, matte black shirt, matte black jacket.
For anyone who
pants.
Think he changed just for the Met Gala, he did not.
No.
They're matte black.
I'm still the
that
Marquez you know.
True.
You know me.
Blood runs thick.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere. Actually, here's a funny part. So Anna Wintour is the she runs the event, and she runs Vogue. And so the Met Gala, everyone who goes is hand approved by her.
Mm-hmm.
And as I did the suit tailoring and fitting, they had to send a picture of my fit to her for
really?
Approval. I did the fitting in a white shirt and a white bow tie. And, you know, they're like, "Oh, yeah, we have to get your cuff length, you know, a quarter of an inch. We can't be sending a gentleman out there with a half an inch of cuff showing. Anna will not accept that.
How dare.
That's not going to work." So, like, I go, you know, I get the length all set right. They pin everything down. They send the picture. So when I get the email, like, "Yep, you know, your COVID tests are negative, your ID went through, everything's good, and Anna Wintour approved your exact fit. So we suggest you wear that, but we'll include the black versions just in case."
Okay.
And so on my way there, I'm Googling it, like, what is white tie? Like, how flexible is this? Am I allowed to wear all black? And I convinced myself, like, I gotta go matte black everything.
Good.
I have to. So I wore the black tie.
And you did it?
Black shirt. And that was it. So.
Okay. So matte black everything's is Vogue approved, is what I'm seeing.
It's Anna Wintour approved.
Cover.
Well, I did shake her hand, but like, she never approved the black version. She approved the black and white version, but everyone was wearing black and white. So I had to do my thing. you know?
You did it.
But I didn't get kicked out, so we'll see if I get invited back. That's the Met Gala.
And you wore an Apple Watch.
I did. That's the other thing.
I wanted to ask you. I forgot.
It was really funny. So Mark Rober had this incredible watch with this like planetary system and these amazing complications. I don't know if he would even let me say how much that watch costs. It's like one of 10 in the world. It's
17.
It's six digits.
One of 17.
Did you look
or
it
something
up?
Like that.
You know how much it costs?
I did not look. I don't know how much it costs. I just know how rare it is.
He, when we left the Met, he took it off and put it in his pocket. I'll put it that way. I had the black Apple Watch on. I was like, I got to get the MKBHD band going. So at least I'm wearing me or something like that. But yeah, I had an Apple Watch on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hid that.
Yeah.
Good
and
job.
Shook Anna Wintour's hand. So take that, right, Kevin
just
O'Leary.
Kidding, you're not going back to the Met Gala.
What are you
going to
do about that, Kevin? No, it was a good time.
That's awesome.
You want to talk about Twitch?
Yeah, I don't know how I segue Met Gala to Twitch. So there it is.
Yeah.
You know, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, I love talking about live streaming, and we've talked about it a lot because while we always talk about YouTube kind of being like the end all be all, at least for now or in the foreseeable future, they're video on demand. Like no one's beating them. We've talked about Vimeo. They're not doing great. Twitch right now
is generous.
While is like the mainstay live stream platform, I think there's room for that to be taken over.
Definitely.
I think YouTube's a huge competitor there, which I'm going to get into a little later, but that's why I think I find this so interesting. So Bloomberg leaked some changes Twitch is considering making to its partnership program. The way you monetize on Twitch is if you get enough viewers, there's some metrics you can hit that you get something called the affiliate program, which enables your sub button. If you're unaware with Twitch, subbing on Twitch is a little different than on YouTube. It's more like the membership platform on YouTube where you pay money.
Yeah.
And then you get like ad free on that channel. You get some emotes and stuff like that. So you unlock your sub button at affiliate and you do a 50-50 revenue split with them. That's the only way you make money. At a certain point, if you can get far enough, you can get personally sponsored or partnered, excuse me, with Twitch. That gets a little different. There's negotiations in there. There's rumors of people maybe like Shroud, Ninja, Tim the Tapman, you know, those high streamers getting up to like 70-30 splits, like really, really good.
Oh, you can change your revenue split if you get big enough because you're important enough to them.
You negotiate it in the contract. So these changes, I'll just go over them one by one here and we can talk about each of them. These are considered changes, not finalized, but incentives for more ads, so like more ad breaks during the live stream, play more ads. New revenue split, 70% down to 50%. That's a massive number.
Was 70% by default?
I don't think by default, but I think there are plenty of people who were up at the 70%
and they're
range
getting bumped
in the
back,
partnership.
Back down to 50?
Back to 50, which is the default affiliate
for
range.
Everyone?
Anybody who can hit a certain amount of viewers can get to there.
Okay.
A new tier system and no more exclusivity. So, I mean, I saw this around. In the tech world, you know, we look at gaming and everything a lot. Every single live streamer I followed tweeted about this because for live streamers on Twitch, some of these are terrifying, I would say. Let's just start with revenue split 70 to 50 because like 20% in literally anything is a giant, giant jump.
So for the people who were at the 70% tier, it's just a pay cut. Basically.
It's a big pay cut. When you're at, I do believe though, if you had your contract already, like they're probably gonna have to go through that contract. I don't know when these changes might happen if they do happen. But a 20% pay decrease is gigantic.
That sounds like a company that's struggling to make money. And when we saw like the other stuff, like incentives for more ads, which we might talk about more, like YouTube's done the same thing. YouTube has allowed more mid rolls. Like they used to have a 10-minute video before you needed to. If you wanted to enable mid-rolls in a video, the video had to be at least 10 minutes long. They moved that to 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And they also automatically checked the box on new 8-minute plus uploads to just automatically add mid-rolls.
Yeah.
So YouTube's been through this where they're like, okay, we need to make more money. Here's what we're going to do. So incentivizing more ads isn't new. We've seen it before. It works. I'm not shocked that Twitch is going to try to do that.
Yeah.
The revenue split cut sounds like, okay, we really need to find some money somewhere. Is Twitch struggling that much?
I don't know. So I have two. I think the biggest reason when I first read this is, if you'll remember, that revenue split counts with Amazon Prime subs, which is if you have Amazon Prime, you get one free sub every month. Mm-hmm. And the creators still get the full revenue split from that. Even though the person's not paying anything, it's like they're paying $5 to the creator. So
if someone has Amazon Prime, mm-hmm. they are given one free sub per month.
Every month.
When they sub to you, the creator will still get the split of yep. what you were supposed to get paid
exactly.
if they paid full price. And then Twitch gets zero.
I guess ultimately Twitch gets zero. They get 30% of their money that they gave out already,
right.
I guess.
Sure.
So I think that, and now if we can connect that to the incentive for more ads, that would be my guess as to why this is becoming an issue. They want to still have creators make up that 20% difference. So they're going to have, assuming some sort of incentive, obviously, to run more ads because they want the creators to make more money to make up for that. Mm-hmm. But they obviously were not making money off of free subscriptions. Now, there's right. obviously people doing regular subscriptions. There's some benefits and there's tier systems to do bigger subscriptions. But I mean, there are a lot of Amazon Prime members out there, and there are a lot of Amazon Prime subs. If you watch a popular streamer, they'll constantly be like, thanks for the Prime sub. Thanks for the Prime sub. Like,
oh, does it tell you when it's a Prime sub or is the person's one
their
free sub?
Alerts, depending on what That's their funny. Alerts are. But you will see a lot of people specifically mention Prime subs. And yeah. I think the reason they mention it is because some people still don't know that they have Prime subs. So if they say it, somebody might ask.
That's smart.
There's a whole meme of Ninja like creating this selling point of like what a Prime sub was, because he would constantly say it during his streams all the time. And then that's why he got to a point where he had hundreds of thousands of subs. Yeah. Now, the biggest issue, though, and what I see a lot of people complaining about with the incentive for more ads is like Twitch has kind of been pushing ads towards the creators recently. I think within the last year, they created a rule. It used to just be ads would play pre-roll. And then once you got into it, the creators basically had their chances for ad breaks and could send them whenever. Now you have to run at least 1 minute of ads per hour of streaming.
You have to.
I believe that's just for partners, but
okay.
an hour or 1 minute of ads for an hour of streaming. Now, that doesn't sound that bad, but there are a lot of streamers who hate that, like absolutely hate that. Some of them are just doing so well and they do well on subs, like they don't care about ad mid-rolls or like the money from ads, so they don't really run them at all. And to them, it's like it's interrupting this part of a live broadcast. And when you're doing things live, a lot of times you're doing them that, you know, that content is lasting more than an hour. You're not just playing games where it's like 20 minute game. I could queue up, run an ad mid roll. You're not going to miss anything. Mm-hmm. So those ads coming in are potentially like popping up at the worst times. And you could be like literally missing content that's happening on the live stream. Huh. And that's just like, it's a terrible user experience. I totally get why Twitch would want to do that because they need to make more money, but that's a bad user experience and bad partner experience.
Yeah, it's in Twitch's best interest to try to get people used to ads. Mm-hmm. And I've always been on the same side. Like, ads are not a good experience. I don't like watching ads. I don't like getting interrupted with a double unskippable pre-roll or mid-roll or something like that. So if I can avoid serving those ads, I will also avoid that because I don't want to give people that bad experience. But yeah, it's in Twitch's best interest to make it, to normalize ads and make people cool with like, yeah, there's going to be a 1 minute mid roll. It's been an hour. Like, that's just going to happen sometimes. So I kind of see both sides of it. This also kind of reminded me of, I saw this headline recently. I just pulled it back up. Tesla cancels employee bonuses tied to delivery quotas, raises salaries to compensate. So it's like, you might net the same, but they remove the structure of one version of getting paid and replace it with another. So if Twitch wants people to run ads more, they'll just go, hey, your revenue split is lower. Guess what? Run more ads.
That almost feels like the opposite of what you just said, though, because like in a Salesforce, like hitting quotas
true.
Sucks.
You don't want people to hit quotas.
Yeah. This feels like they're trying to go from like, hey, you're salaried with your subs. We're cutting that.
Yeah, cutting your salary, you quotas. But sell more cars.
Yeah, usually
it's the other way.
I appreciate the Tesla version of that way better than this. I have a couple tweets real quick from a few streamers who mentioned this and actually a pretty good argument on the same side. Hassan, who is like within the last 2 years, probably one of the biggest creators on the platform. He streams like 10 hours a day. I think he, during COVID, streamed 365 days straight or something like that.
Dude, people ask me why I don't stream on Twitch. Like, it is a different skill.
It is.
It's a different
it's
breed.
It's crazy what you I have can't. To do. Which is why, but again, that's why ads are so much different on there, because like you're keeping people entertained for these long amounts of times
hours.
While you're on.
Yeah.
Running those ads are interrupting things where when we do mid-rolls, like we can be like, oh, this video has a natural break in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we can figure that out later and yeah. put it in and it works.
Yeah.
So Hassan said, when I negotiated my contract, I knew this was coming and wanted to lock in 1 minute of ads per hour. This ad density is the lowest out of the top streamers. Twitch still serves pre-rolls because it wasn't 3 minutes. Love Twitch, but it seems like they're moving away from CC to fix their profits. Which then again, even just reading that, it makes it seem like this leak is probably going to happen if he seems to know that something like that was happening before his contract negotiation. And then Pokimane, who I think everyone knows Pokimane's name. She's been a huge Twitch streamer forever. Twitch should implement ads that don't directly interfere with a stream, sidebar, picture-in-picture, underlay. I understand advertisers are essential to making a platform profitable, but intervening with the viewer's experience isn't how they go about it. So
Twitch doesn't have like pop-up or banner ads or any of the other types of ads at all?
They might have some banner ads on the homepage, but I don't think
on
streamer's
streams.
Profile.
Wow, that's actually a huge difference. Because on YouTube, that's been a thing forever, where I literally up until like 2 years ago, never ran a single mid-roll. I was like, well, we've got the ads that pop up. We've got the ads on the side. The channel is self-sustaining. We're not hiring. Like, we don't need to do mid-rolls.
Yeah.
And like, that was fine. They just ran themselves like that. So that's interesting. And I'm kind of surprised Twitch doesn't just pop up on the top of the chat, just like a big square ad that credits the creator the same way.
Not, I agree, but Linus slipped into these comments and actually has a pretty good rebuttal to it.
Okay.
Those ads are barely profitable as for a text-based site that's pretty much worthless since 2010, unless you can pretty much guarantee the viewer can't ignore it. It does nothing for the advertiser, so why would they pay for it? I think that's pretty reasonable. Although, I like the idea of potentially, if the sidebar covered up the chat when it happened,
it bumps down the chat. It just appears above the chat and pushes
even
it
if
down.
It fully went over the chat, it's still interfering with the stream itself, but not the actual content. Maybe it's interfering with like some reactions, but if that's only a minute long, like that's way better than completely blanking out video.
It's the same way like YouTube has ads that pop up over the bottom of the video and you can X out of them. Like, yes, it's interrupting literally the video. Imagine being in a theater and an ad pops up over the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, that would never happen. So yeah, it's interrupting, but
not
it's still an ad that's credited to that viewer and you're targeting that channel.
Yeah.
Still seems pretty good. Maybe there's a bigger difference in like tech savviness of the average Twitch viewer versus the average YouTube viewer.
Yeah, and I do agree with Linus as to like if it pops up on the side and I'm watching, I can just completely ignore it.
Yeah.
And why would like you're not gonna pay the big bucks for that. You wanna that's make fair. Sure it's something. I do know Twitch has done some things in the past where they're called bounties, where it's almost like Twitch can help streamers find sponsored integrations throughout. And I wonder if they'll do more stuff like that, because that seems like an actual good idea where it doesn't interrupt content quite as much, kind of changes the content a bit. But if you like a streamer and their personality, usually you're having a good time in something like that. My last quick thing here, the exclusivity part of it feels crazy to
me. So what is that? What is
eliminating
that?
So like if you're a Twitch partner, you're streaming on Twitch, you're only allowed to live stream on Twitch.
Okay.
You still have YouTube VODs, almost every single Twitch streamer does. But if you're not exclusive, that means there's plenty of platforms out there or programs where you can multi-stream. So you could stream to Twitch and to YouTube at the same time and broaden your audience.
Mm-hmm.
And they obviously didn't want to do that because YouTube's a competitor. But no exclusivity means now
so you can
you
do
could
that
do
now.
Stuff like that. That feels cool. Very strange. It is kind of cool. I'll be interested to see how it goes. I wonder if it could ever pull users away from the platform. I mean, YouTube's clearly taken aim at some of the big streamers. They have Tim the Tatman, Valkyrie, Courage. Mm-hmm. Ludwig's a huge one that they just brought over. He just did an interview with Susan recently. Yep. Like, YouTube's clearly gunning for things. I don't think I'm even going to get on the topic of what I think YouTube can do and what's going on over there. I hope eventually we can get deeper into that. But like YouTube's coming for them. Twitch is making mistakes all the time. I think this battle's getting closer and closer. I think there's some holes in the armor.
I think that's a good thing. I think the competition is going to make like the fact that the competition is making it better for streamers. Like, hey, there's no more exclusives now. And hey, You can try YouTube at the same time if you want to, and all these things are making it a better overall experience. Wouldn't happen if YouTube wasn't competing.
Yeah, but there's also a 20% revenue split cut.
Drop.
I almost wonder if the exclusivity thing was like a, hey, we know this sucks. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can go make that 20% on YouTube with 20% of your viewers or something like that.
Interesting. Okay. So, I want to pin this for later, but I also keep thinking in the back of my head, like, what is harder? Entertaining for 10 hours straight live or spending 10 hours on a video that's only 5 minutes long that you then upload and entertain someone for 5 minutes straight?
I don't think there needs to be a battle between
them. There probably isn't one that's harder or the other, but it's very different.
People who are good at different things.
Very different skill. Mm-hmm. Very different skill.
I think there are people who live stream that would have a really hard time focusing and polishing something down to 10 minutes. I think there's people who can hyper focus on something that would be like 90% of their live stream would be like dead space.
Yeah. So, imagine me trying to talk about like the new S22 Ultra for 10 hours straight. Can you imagine?
Can we just do a day where we come into work and you live stream the entire day and you have to entertain?
Woof. I'd have to switch it up at some point. We're going to take a quick break, but I think right before that, we have a trivia question. It's my new favorite thing.
The Rivian R1T won the Motor Trend Truck of the Year for 2022. Which truck won in 2021?
Truck of the Year 2021. That's a good question. All right.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the new EV section of the Waveform podcast, henceforth known as the Waveform section.
Henceforth known as just pretty much the Waveform podcast.
Yeah, well, we've done this before. There's a new EV, and this time it's from Subaru. Now, you were looking forward to this because you've been following Subaru's releases,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, new is like we've known about it and they've teased it forever and like we've seen it and it's slowly grown up and there's been rumors, but now we have it all.
We knew Subaru was going to come out with a Solterra, that it would be an electric vehicle, that it would be a sort of a crossover sized thing. Yeah. And we were just waiting for like release date, spec. That's
right.
Sort of
and
the big
price,
and price, the three big ones. Mm-hmm. And we did finally get those things. So what do we do first? The price. Let's just start with the price. We cry.
Cry.
Spoiler alert.
Foreshadowing. Yeah.
It's not what we were hoping. So starting price, $45,000. Didn't we make a bet
on
this?
We had a bet on that. Yeah.
What was the bet?
I think it was over, I think, did we say 39 or did we say like 42.5?
The bet was over under 39K.
Ooh, over under 39. So
back in November 18th of 2021.
So starting I went the pessimistic route and said over.
I took the under 39.
I think so.
Yeah, Andrew was over, Marquez was under.
Dang.
Yeah.
All right, I took that L.
I think in my mind, I wanted to win either way. This was going to be a huge win if Subaru went under 39, and it was going to be a huge loss if it went over. That sort of, I need the little win. So,
hedge your emotional damage.
Here's the one time I'll be happy for the rest of this segment. Yeah, 45 is a tough price.
It's a starting price. It's an EV, supply chain shortages. I kind of get it, but it's like it's not going to be cheap to start at 45K. So that's where it is beginning. Subaru Solterra, 45K.
I want to check right now. This might be their most expensive car that they sell.
Most expensive starting?
Mm-hmm.
I can see that.
Let me check real quick. So their most expensive car is the top level trim Ascent, which is their three row SUV. That's at 45.9, but you can also get a base Ascent at 32. So like, this is their most expensive car.
This Volterra leapfrogs the entire lineup in price. You got to really want this one. So what do you get for your 45K to start? You get a 228 mile range.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a quoted 0 to 80% battery charge in under an hour.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rough.
So that would have been good in like 2017. 228 mile range would have been okay in 2017.
These specs to me feel like they're like super base level specs where I would only be impressed with these specs if we were getting a new price range. Like if we were getting a $30,000 car with these specs,
exactly.
I would be like, this is amazing. This is our this is like the jump into being far more affordable. And like 228, it's not that great compared to other things we've had. But if you're looking at like a super base level EV, that's going to get you to and from work pretty much every single day on your charge from like your garage, right? So like, sure, you're making the sacrifice of not being able to do long road trips quite as easily, but like you're trying to buy the cheapest EV possible. Like, you know, you're going to have to make sacrifices.
I would basically, in like the most basic sense of it, be looking for either a low price or a high range, one or the other. Mm-hmm. And this has neither.
This has neither.
It's a high price and a low range.
Yeah. And then even with the low range, giving it this under an hour, I think someone quoted it at 0 to 80% was like 56 minutes.
Yeah. So it's 100 kilowatt charging.
It's brutal.
So just for some context, the new, like if you look at a Tesla right now, they charge at 200 to 250 kilowatts if you find the chargers that support it.
Yeah.
The slower Tesla superchargers are 150 kilowatts. Mm-hmm. And then the fastest ones you might see, I think a Taycan supports 300, you know, kilowatt charging. So there's some really fast EVs out there.
I think there's even some cheaper ones now. Isn't the Hyundai and the Kia like quoted at 300?
I think the Ioniq might be the fastest charging. There's one that does 350.
I think that's it. I have it here later because I want to compare these to the EV6 and the Ioniq 5. But I think the Ioniq 5 has like 0 to 80 in like 16 minutes or something like that.
So the 100 kilowatt charging being the max on a fast charger is also pretty disappointing in 2022. Mm-hmm. Like if you drop this car today, that would have been, again, fine in 2017. But again, we're looking at a 45K starting price and a low range. So you could redeem it with super fast charging, but it's also not super fast charging.
Yeah. And like to put into context here also, like $45,000, you know, when we only talk about EVs a lot, it doesn't sound like the craziest price in the world. But when we're talking about just the average person in a car, and especially the average person getting a Subaru, you can get a hatchback Impreza starting at 19, at under 20.
Yeah.
No so to have a car that's, it's more similar to like the Crosstrek, which is basically the hatchback Impreza lifted a little bit at double the price.
You have to really want the electric one.
Yeah, it feels like not quite for that crowd.
Yeah.
So it is a really, I consider it way overpriced, I think.
Yeah.
A couple of things. Some people really don't like the design of it. I've heard people say it doesn't look like a Subaru. I kind of disagree with not looking like, I think the Crosstrek and the Imprezas have been becoming like a little sleeker and harder lines. And I think it kind of follows that path and isn't too far off. Mm-hmm. I know people don't like the, like it has these black matte sides kind of to the front of it that I don't love, but I don't hate. I don't think it looks that bad. The interior looks fine.
There's a lot of like interesting design decisions that have to be made with EVs because there's always like, I'm looking at it now. Yeah, that's interesting. I actually kind of like it. But I also think you don't have to look like the other cars in the lineup.
No.
This is the thing. Like the Mach-E, which I'm starting to see everywhere.
I see Mach-E everywhere.
Yeah, you have the flat plastic front grille, which I think is nice. The performance version has that. So it's the body matching color on the front grille. Like that's not a thing you see in other performance Mustangs. It's like different. That's fine. And you also see a lot of aero caps. Every time you see an EV, they're trying to maximize efficiency. Aero caps are a big deal. And you just don't see aero caps on most of the other EVs. So you see those two things. You know it's the EV and it looks like the EV. And I think it's fine to be a little different like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I don't like mind how it looked. I give it a 6.5 out of 10.
If I'm being honest right now,
pure design.
I've never been super into the Subaru aesthetic. This is my favorite looking Subaru.
I totally agree with you. As a Subaru fan, their aesthetic is always like low. Their WRXs, I think, look really nice. But then other than that, they're pretty much fine. It's usually like reliability and price, and price is why I like them so much.
Yeah.
But so like another thing here is that this is built with Toyota as well. Toyota is also coming out with a bZ4X, which is pretty much the exact same car if you look at it. I mean, it is the exact same car. It's similar to what Toyota and Subaru did with the BRZ and the, I forget if it's the FRS or the Type 86. I think they change the name sometimes, and I will get crucified for saying that. But the biggest issue here, though, is if you, the bZ4X is cheaper and has some different specs. So the problem is Subaru likes to do all-wheel drive and everything, so they're only offering the all-wheel drive version, which we know for EV means less efficiency, so now you're losing range on it. But there is still a bZ4X all-wheel drive that's $1,000 cheaper.
All-wheel drive. Okay, well, I mean, yeah, so also adding a second motor obviously adds weight, but you can improve efficiency if you have lower-powered motors, if you have the right motor combo.
So far in all the cars I'm going to mention in this segment, the all-wheel drive version has less range than the rear-wheel drive
version. It's a higher performance version. Okay, yeah. Dang. Well, you know, they tried, I think, Subaru.
Yeah, so you can get a bZ4X forward or front-wheel drive, which I do like. There's not a huge difference between rear-wheel and front-wheel. If you're in snow, rear-wheel generally can be a little harder to navigate because the back slips out. Yeah. So I do like that the bZ4X has front wheel drive and 252 miles of range for 42K. So like I would pick that over the Solterra any
day. Better. It's better.
Even if you like the Solterra, that is it.
Yeah.
It's just cheaper and has more range. Yeah. But to compare it here, we said it before. The reason this is so tough to look at is because of the EV6 and the Ioniq 5 right now, which are very similarly sized cars.
I
want
to test the Ioniq 5 Ace. I'm so into
the
this.
Ioniq, I saw one when I was on vacation. It looks so good.
I'm so into it.
The interior had this like weird white bezels on the screen that I didn't love. But other than that, like from the outside, I was like, whew, there's a car like you don't see. Like it doesn't look like anything else on the road right now.
That's it. That's another thing. So you look at other Hyundais, and if I was a Hyundai fan, I'd be like, this doesn't look exactly like any other Hyundai. I think that's totally fine. Yeah. And it's got I like the wheels. I love the lights.
Dude, it gives me the Rivian feel. It's like, it feels like if Rivian was building a crossover. Like Hayato has mentioned it before that Rivian is, they're getting away from that super aggressive, which I actually do really like, but this more like friendly feel to it.
Yeah.
Like friendly robots, not like Terminator robots. So like it has that friendly feel.
You know what this reminds me of? So a really long time ago, back in the day, maybe the first car I can ever remember my family having was called a Grand Prix, and it had those like square lights in the taillights.
Okay.
And the Ioniq is a modernized version of those taillights. It's a Grand, can I find a Grand Prix?
I want to say that's lights. Pontiac.
Yes, yeah, so it was a Pontiac Grand Prix. Yeah, you can kind of find, yep, it's got the taillights, and they're always like these dots and everything. And this is just a new super modern version of it. So I'm very into the Ioniq. I want to test it. I want to see if it's good. But like you said, on paper, it beats it in everything. It's got 300 miles of range. It starts at about, 42K? Is that what it is? And
there's for the Solterra or the Ioniq?
The Ioniq?
Here, I can show, yeah, I have some Ioniq specs here. 300 miles, 42K rear-wheel drive. You can get all-wheel drive, 252 miles at 47K. But also remember, that's 2,000 more expensive, but fast charging.
Also charges dramatically faster.
Dramatically fast. Like, that's not even a competition. Almost three times faster, I think, than that. And then you also have the Kia EV6, which I also think looks really, really good. You can get 230 miles of range rear-wheel drive at 40K, 310 miles of range rear-wheel drive 47K, or you can do 274 miles of range all-wheel drive for 50K.
Yeah, it's all about context. Like, I know a lot of people hear, like, the difference between 220 miles and 300 miles is like, okay, 80 more miles of range. What does that even mean? It's all about just, like, convenience, how often you have to charge it. And if you were to do a longer trip, the type of, like, experience you would have. So, you know, the sweet spot today being somewhere between 300 and 400 miles, because that's when you're going to have to get out and use the bathroom anyway. And then just being able to stop anywhere and charge. The 220 mile range version of this experience is like kind of inconvenient because you're stopping more often than you have to, and then you're adding stops for just charging but not using the bathroom or snacking, and then it's just a whole mental...
And using the bathroom and snacking can, with a 1 hour
with
zero
a slow
to 80 charger,
charger yeah.
is rough.
See, that's the cherry on top is the slow charging. I really can't believe that's what it ended up with.
So I'd rather save $5,000, get the EV6, same range, but 0 to 80% in 18 minutes, yeah, on the right charger. Obviously.
It's like when the OnePlus has like a smaller battery, but it charges at like a million miles an hour. Mm-hmm. They'll give like 80-watt charging to a 3,800 milliamp hour battery. It's like this phone doesn't last all day, but the second I plug it in, it's like added 40%. So I'm cool with that. Cool with that.
Yes. So I think all in all, at the end of the day, I'm sad. Me sad. Andrew sad.
You won the bet.
I won the bet, but it doesn't make up for, yeah. Was there a consequence for that bet? Maybe that'll cheer me up.
I don't know if we bet anything. I think we just bet to bet.
Bragging rights. Bragging rights aren't fun.
Well, I think our next bet was about F-150 Lightning, which
that
I think
one actually
also
has
be
a
wrong.
Hot sauce. Oh, I think really? That one might have a hot sauce consequence.
Oh,
we'll
I think
we'll
I'm,
check that
I'm
out.
I'm very wrong about that because they've already... Spoiler alert, we're going to have one soon. So
I mean, a good segue after this break and after this trivia question, we're going to talk a little bit about some F-150 updates, some good, some bad, some brutally honest. So
and maybe some hot sauce. Okay, that's fine. All right. Let's get one more trivia question, take a quick break, then we'll come back and talk about all that stuff.
Okay, so this one is about phones. So in August 2018, Red released the Hydrogen 1. The company also makes all the cameras we use around here, besides like the one that Hayato uses. So the question is, how many megapixels did that rear camera have?
On the Hydrogen 1?
On the Hydrogen 1.
How many megapixels?
The rear camera.
Hydrogen 1 rear camera. Okay.
Never. I mean, I have a chance.
I have a guess. Actually, I don't know if I know the exact answer, but it's coming back to me, sadly. Yeah. I'm remembering all the sad things about that phone.
Think about it on the sad break.
Yeah.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Support for Waveform comes from 1Password. So it's hard to come up with a totally unique password every time you need one, but it's what you gotta do to stay secure. Luckily, a password manager makes creating and tracking your passwords completely painless. So 1Password combines industry-leading security with award-winning design to bring its users private, secure, and user-friendly password management. And it does that by generating as many strong, unique passwords as you need, and then securely storing them in an encrypted vault that only you have access to. With 1Password, you just need to remember one strong account password, and it'll protect everything else from your logins, your credit cards, notes, office Wi-Fi, etc. You no longer need to keep a bunch of sticky notes all over your desk or reuse the same password over and over again. I've tried out 1Password. As you know, I switch between devices and phones constantly, and so using 1Password to just fill out things quickly and log into a whole bunch of stuff makes switching between devices a lot easier, so I'm all good to go once I sign in. So right now, our listeners can get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/waveform. That's the number 1Password.com/waveform for 2 free weeks. So 1Password.com/waveform.
All right, we're back. Let's talk about this. I want to talk about this video that's really messing with my head on Twitter. It's a video, of somebody in a Tesla Model S. I guess it's a Plaid or it's a refresh Model S, who hits a button in the UI with a power lifting frunk. It opens the frunk. I've been waiting for this on the Model S for forever. You have to manually lift the frunk. It's not a huge deal, but every new EV with a frunk is doing the power lifting frunk. Mm-hmm. Lucid, F-150, Rivian. So great. So that's something that's been added. And then also, there's a button in the UI to tilt that center screen towards the user. This is another pretty minor thing, but the old Model S's with the vertical screens default tilted the entire screen towards the driver. And that was kind of neat. There'd be less glare. You could see everything, but your passenger wouldn't really be using the screen very much. In the new cars, the screen is flat. So as someone who came from the old car, it's like, it's kind of a little away from me a little
off,
bit.
It feels off,
And so I heard, I think they said in the original presentation of the new car, like, it'll have tilting, or it's at least been on the website since I got the car. Yeah. It's never tilted. So this video pops up, and it looks like it's, I mean, this is the type of thing that could be added with a software update. But the more I look into this video, the more it's messing with my head. So first of all, it comes from a user, Larry Lee, whose username is Tesla Frunk.
Okay.
And who has notoriously tweeted and sold aftermarket installs of power opening Frunks. So now I'm like, okay, is this, did you add this to the car, or
the,
did Tesla add this to the car?
Or the screen?
The Frunk. Just the Frunk.
Just the Frunk.
I'm just wondering about the Frunk.
That Twitter name changes me from thinking this is a new VIN number to automatically. But you said he did go through the UI, right?
So that's the thing. So he went through the UI, and the caption to the video is, Tesla finally added screen swivel to the refresh Model S. So it doesn't mention the Frunk. So to me, this guy's selling an aftermarket Frunk with this tweet.
And you could still could go through the UI because it's just the original Frunk button, right?
I believe
I mean, it's hard to see in there, but he could have just somehow,
just connect that to
when the hydraulics on it or whatever feel the latch open up, it just automatically goes
exactly. Okay. Right now in the UI, I hit the Frunk button, it just opens the latch.
Okay.
And then you can pull it open. So maybe he's got a system where when it feels the latch open, it opens it all the way with the power system. I believe that that is not from Tesla.
I agree with you there.
But I don't know.
It should be. That seems like a pretty obvious thing to do.
Okay.
But I would agree with you, aftermarket.
So the second part is the swiveling screen part, which has been even weirder to me. So like I said, since day one, since I bought the car, it has said on the site that this is a tilting screen.
Okay.
There's never been a button to tilt it. You can pull it all you want. It won't tilt. It's been flat. There have been teardowns of the Model S that suggest that the parts are there for it to be able to tilt.
Okay, that was my first question.
But it's lacking the electric motor to actually push the tilt out. So it's got the arm folded back in place.
Okay.
But the mechanism to power or tilt it isn't there. So now this tweet says Tesla finally added screen swivel to a refresh Model S. This makes me think, okay, either one, it's a new software update, and all cars after a certain date have the electric motors, and they will get the software update and be able to swivel the screen. Or this is a new VIN car where they just started adding the motors like yesterday. Or this is also an aftermarket modification. But the fact that he said Tesla added it makes me think it's not an aftermarket modification.
Yeah.
But I'm still not sure if my car, which I bought when it said it would have screen tilt, will get the screen tilt. If I was guessing, I would say that this is something I'm going to have to get my car into a Tesla shop to be retrofit for.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure how long that will take. Not sure if that's true or false. Not sure. It should be free because they said it would have the feature in the first place.
True.
But I am not sure. I have so many more questions than answers after seeing this. Yes.
I would say, I mean, like hearing that whole breakdown, I would imagine they would offer for free if you're right about the mechanisms being in there, just minus the motors.
Yeah.
If that part is not true, then I see no chance of that.
Which is
it's
crazy.
Just a new VIN number.
Yeah.
But
like you
it's
said
crazy,
it was
but that's not it's unlike what we've seen in the history of Tesla.
Yeah, Tesla's talked about stuff before that's never happened. I still can't play, what was the game they said? The Witcher? They said they put some games on this screen.
Witcher?
Yeah, you still can't play the games that they showed in
really?
The car at launch. Like in the when you went to the Tesla event, when people were there, it was showing a bunch of games on the screen, and everyone who reported about the car said, you'll be able to play games at your stop with a controller. That has also never happened. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend they've never not shipped something they said they would ship.
So I'm interested as, is this a, if the parts are in there and there's no motors, was this a just like, you know, supply chain issue where they sent them out and were kind of hoping no one would notice? Because they have sent cars out also just like, remember the USB-C ports that just didn't have the connection on, they had had the drill out.
Yep.
They did retrofit those for free though.
Right.
But they did also ship them out without telling anybody about it and letting people figure it out themselves. And the screen tilt is not going, like, you're not going to find that out.
Yeah, like, USB-C isn't, like, a listed feature. Maybe it is a listed feature on the site, but, like, the screen tilt seems like it's one where, like, they put it on the site as a feature. They mentioned it before, so I'm like, I think it would be weird to never ship screen tilt.
There's no button in the software currently,
correct?
Right? Okay.
Yeah, so Anyway, that I just wanted to share that. This video is really messing with my head.
I'm sorry.
I'm just gonna, maybe by the time this podcast comes out, we have an update and I'll have my car getting the screen tilt. But as of right now, this one account being the only one who can tell me about it, who happens to also do aftermarket stuff to cars, is really messing with me.
It's gonna be hard to get a drone flyover to see if they're adding the, that might the be a screen. Little too close.
Yeah.
All right, other EV news. Really quick, Dodge finally teased their Ram 1500 EV, which is like this feels up there with, like, if you're talking about the most popular vehicles in the US,
this is the
Ram
other big
1500
one.
Is like right there with the F-150.
I'm pretty sure it goes F-150 series, Ram 1500 series, and then another truck.
Yeah, and then I
like
think
the
it's
Camry,
like
Camry or something.
I think it's actually RAV4, CRV, and then like Camry.
Yeah.
So we're talking about one of the biggest, the next biggest vehicle in the U.S. It's the teaser is very small. They really didn't say anything. They took a little shot at Ford with it.
Have we brightened it?
I have not, but I think this is already like kind of a brightened image from their like little video.
Yeah.
It's just pretty much the lights coming up on front, which do look really nice, and it says Ram across the front of the truck. Looks really sleek from the like silhouette you're getting of it.
Yeah,
We'll see. I feel like Dodge hasn't mentioned much about EVs. I really don't ever remember talking about them.
Yeah, it's funny when you think about like Ford versus Dodge. Okay, so Ford beat Dodge to the punch for an electric pickup truck.
Yeah.
But when I think of the Ford crowd, as much as you're like a truck person's a truck person, they don't want electric. The Dodge crowd, I think, seems from the outside in even more like petrol head. Like gas cars, like everything from like the Chargers to the Hellcats to the SRT, the Durango, everything I've seen from Dodge is like Motorhead.
I will personally ask. I know I have a friend who is a Dodge fan that listens to this podcast.
Okay.
CJ, I will reach out to you soon, and I want to hear what you said about this. He did mention he was interested in the F-150, not buying it. He is a Dodge fan, but he does like the idea of when you look at an EV from pure specs, there's some cool stuff there. As long as you're in that category where it fits to, because obviously truck stuff is a lot different. But I'd like to see that, because I, as well as a non-truck person, seem to see Dodge truck people as being far more loyal,
Dodge
like insanely
in
loyal.
Yeah, like I haven't seen any Dodge EV stuff at all. Like maybe I've missed it, but is there a Dodge Charger electric being teased anywhere? Like I don't think that's happening.
I don't see Dodge talking about EV stuff very much. So
this
kind of came out of the blue, instant shot at Ford, because they said they're going to bring the thunder to the Ford's Lightning.
If I could make another bet, this probably isn't that bold of a bet, but I would bet that this Ram 1500 has to be a much more aggressive looking, like, bold design truck.
Well, we can kind of see. I agree with you. I think it's going to be so kind of how the Silverado is like different, right? The Lightning is the same as
exactly
the F-150 minus the bar light.
A little bit of light difference.
I think you're right. I think they're going to go the like intense route with this.
Okay. We'll see.
I'm excited to see it.
Yeah.
And now on F-150, Nilay had a really, really interesting interview with Jim Farley, the CEO of Ford. And I think there's a couple quick points here I just want to talk about, but we'll link the whole article in the show notes. And I highly, highly suggest reading it, because I think it's just important for EV in general. Talking about the F-150 release, one thing I saw that was cool in here is they just did their production launch the other day, but apparently this was right around that time. At the time of this interview, they have 1,800 vehicles built already. So the production plant's up and running and pumping, quote unquote, for like a new production line. Like, it's starting to move at least.
Yeah, you start somewhere. So, you know, they've built 1,800. Again, I think I saw that number and I was like, oh, cool. Did you deliver any of them?
No.
Okay, no. So they've started building them, and it always looks like a ramp. Every time we see a new product line, we expect to see the ramp go, 3,600, then 10,000, then 50,000. So we'll see that
To see that it's like at an okay number of cars before deliveries happen makes me feel a tad optimistic. But then right after that, he also mentions that like he knows there's limiting factors in here. And right now he thinks batteries are actually going to be the biggest limiting factor on pumping out the F-150 numbers. We know that the orders for the F-150 are like
massive,
insane.
Yeah.
He thinks it'll probably take 1.5 to 2 years, I believe, to actually fulfill all of those orders before they get into the like full blown just production. You know, you don't need a pre-order for it. So that's a while. And he thinks not chips, because because Ford is so massive and buying so many chips for an F-150 already, they have good connections with all of that. He's not worried about chips being the limiting factor. He's worrying about batteries being the limiting factor,
okay.
Which I do think they're investing some more money into a battery factory in Georgia that they work with. But that's going to be the thing that's going to stall them out.
Interesting.
He was also really, really blunt about the charging network, which I thought was really interesting. He said he gives their charging network about a C, or not even just the network, but about how it works with the network.
The experience?
Yeah, like a C on a grade, which I think might even be a little optimistic, maybe.
It's
our experience, we've talked about this before, was really bad, but we were also in a super remote part of the Northeast.
Yeah, I was going to say, so we did a 1,000-mile road trip with the Mach-E. I would say from the exact route that we took, our trip was like a D-.
Yeah.
But I think if you average out all the different chargers and all the different experiences and all the different routes people are taking for road trips, I could see it being a C, maybe. Sure.
It probably really depends on how you do it.
Are there
it as
A-pluses
well.
Out there? A-plus routes? You hit the charger, it's
on
perfect.
On non-Tesla networks?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
I mean, I'm sure there are some. But,
yeah, so average.
One thing he did mention is that he thinks Hyundai and Kia, I think, are doing really good things with the way they bring you to charging networks, which is like making sure they're available, making sure charges or stalls are available, and they want to look at other companies, how they're doing that, and being able to update how Ford, because this isn't just for the F-150, this is for the Mach-E, which
is for everything.
Like we mentioned before, I see those everywhere now.
Yeah, like let's not get it twisted. We did our video, but like we're not the only ones to say that the charging network is like a problem for these cars. After the video though, like Ford reached out and they're like, here's a bunch of stuff that we're doing to hopefully make sure this experience doesn't happen again. We're going to have people constantly checking the chargers. We're going to try to make sure as many of them as possible are not just fixed, but updated so that we don't navigate you to one that's not updated. So like they know, it's not like they're unaware that these are challenges that they have to tackle. It's just it's a challenge they don't own.
Mm-hmm.
Like they don't own Try America.
And a big part of that challenge is relying on user reports. And so one of the things that he talked about that he hopes they implement soon is not having to rely fully on the user report, but being able to rely on the data of a car plugging in, how long it gets plugged in for, how quickly it moves away. So they can tell, like, if a car goes up, plugs in, and immediately leaves, that charger's probably broken. They need to, it reports that automatically and can hopefully get a technician there. And that just, like, the charging network in general really needs to be fixed, which I think we can all agree on. And I think is a huge step for not just Ford, for literally all EVs.
It'll be interesting also to see, you know, as we have more and more Mach-Es out there, like this is Tesla's huge advantage with like self-driving, for example, was they have so many cars on the road that a small fraction of them doing some testing for them is a lot of data. And so now that Ford is going to have a ton of EVs on the road, the Mach-E, F-150 is going to start being out there, they have a lot of cars with that sort of information and an internet connection, and they can beam that up, and that can be very useful.
And hopefully one more step from that is Electrify America, who's servicing all of those, is hopefully now getting, you know, every new company that puts another line of EVs out, hopefully that's more information for Electrify America to start grabbing from and increasing that. And one more thing he talked about, which I thought was interesting, was that he's working on trying to convince legislators to increase the EV tax limit for the U.S., mentioning that a bunch of other countries have done that. And that's not just for Ford. That's just for everybody.
Well, so, but it would benefit Ford.
Obviously. Yeah, yeah. But it's, you know, I'll take something that benefits Ford if it means it also benefits literally all of us and gets the U.S. onto the EV.
Yeah, like unfamiliar, the point of the tax incentive was to accelerate the adoption of EVs.
Exactly.
So every company was given a set number of cars that they could sell that are electric that would be rebated by the government. Mm-hmm. So if somebody bought the car, they'd get a $7,000-something rebate on their taxes. And then after they sold that number of cars, the rebate would go down to 3,000. And then they sold a certain number of cars, it would go down to 1,000. And then it would be something else, and then it would be zero. And so Tesla rocketed through that. They sold a ton of cars. And a lot of these companies who are just starting up, they will get the full tax rebates. Ford sold a lot of EVs. I'm sure they're somewhere
I'm
in
sure
that
they're getting
stratosphere.
Close to that too, yeah.
And so, yes, we would like to see many more companies start to make more. But also, yeah, if you bump the cap, more EV adoption for everyone.
Because that does $7,500 is a big jump. Yeah,
that makes the Solterra $7,000 less.
It was the only argument I saw to actually wanting the Solterra over some is that chances are Subaru's going to sell less than Toyota or Hyundai or Kia.
That's
so cool. Like it might actually be lower in price because you have a better chance of getting the EV tax credit on it.
That is
so really that does put it down to 38, okay. Right?
Yeah.
No.
Even 45. Lower. It was 42, 7? Right?
45.
No, I'm 40. Saying you're, I don't know if the math is right. I was just shaking my head like it's still not good enough.
No, Adam told me I was wrong. Oh, it's still not good enough.
Still not good enough. Whatever. It's like, yeah, maybe 38's good. No. No, it's not.
Not great.
No, that's I think where we're at. We're all very optimistic. No, yeah, we'll link the EV interview from Neelai and Jim down below. Also, mm-hmm. You should definitely check out our Ford F100 video, which was electrified was one, which is a whole separate version of like what an EV is, but the experience.
What EVs could be, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So that we'll link that below as well. But I think the place to end would be to hit the trivia answers, which were one was a car and one was a phone.
One was about trucks, yeah.
One was a truck, okay. Refresh my memory, Adam. What were the first trivia question?
Let's start with the truck one.
Right.
So the first one, the Rivian R1T won the Motor Trend Truck of the Year for 2022. Mm-hmm. Which truck won in 2021?
Motor Trend Truck of the Year 2021. Now, I don't know that many award winners. I know that the Kia Telluride was like the SUV of the year or something.
I could see that, yeah.
But that might also be 2022. So it's probably some, I don't know the answer.
I have a guess.
You do? What's your?
My guess would be the Ford Maverick because it's this like smaller size truck that's also a hybrid and at a really, really good price. And I know a lot of people are super into it. So it feels like something disrupting a little bit.
Does the Jeep count as a truck?
There like are the Jeep trucks.
The Bronco's popular, but it's not a truck, is it?
That's a confusing one because the old Bronco had like the detachable back roof, which like I bet some people would consider a truck, but I don't think the new Broncos do that.
Do you guys want a hint?
Should we? Do we both get the
that
hint?
That means I'm wrong guessing? If he's asking for a hint.
Sounds like it, that definitely means. All right, let's take the hint. Yeah.
We spoke about it in this episode.
Wow.
Kind of.
Oh.
Whoa. A Jace.
The 1500?
We spoke
the
about
Ram.
It. We mentioned the Ram. We spoke about it or mentioned it?
It's just the
mentioned
F-150.
Mentioned it. Okay. No. So I've mentioned a bunch because I went down the list. Let me go with.
Is this a half credit point now that we got a hint?
We
still both don't know it though.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think so. I think it could be a full point.
The only other thing I can think of is if you're right about like SUVs counting as a truck, we did talk about the Ascent for a minute, and the Ascent was Subaru's like new three-row car that everyone loved because it's really cheap for like a three-row.
Yeah, but is that a truck of the year?
I don't think so.
I'm just going to go with the F. No, I'm going to go with the Ram 1500.
I'm wrong. I liked my Maverick guess. Yeah. So I'm just going to say even though I like that too.
The Ram 1500.
Oh, wow.
TRX.
There it is. Oh, TRX. Okay. Yeah, the TRX is like the performance version. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. That's a point. I'll take it. All right. What was the second? Oh, with a red camera, right?
Yep.
The red phone.
In August 2018, Red released a Hydrogen One smartphone. The company also makes all the cameras we use here in the studio. The question is, how many megapixels did the rear camera have in the Red Hydrogen One?
So not only do I not know, I'm scared of getting made fun of for guessing an answer. That's how.
So the camera system, it was his dual cameras. And they were advertising the ability to shoot stereoscopic 3D.
They were also advertising the opportunity of like lenses on the back, which doesn't change the megapixel, but you have to assume that the megapixel has to be able to fit.
Yeah, it's, never
you
happened.
You would assume it has to be a good one because you're going to get all these crazy add-ons so you can film a whole movie.
We already know it was a letdown. Like we don't have to rub it in.
I will rub it in.
Wow, so the number that popped in my head is 12 because everything is 12. But I want to double think here because it was such a weird phone and they had two and there was like the 3D screen and they wanted to show 3D. We took 3D videos and showed it and played it back for Joe Rogan. Remember that?
Was this not a just sensor they pulled out It was.
It was just a, yeah, it was a Sony sensor.
Yeah.
I remember it. It was just a regular Sony sensor, and Red makes cameras. So like they could have made a sensor, but they didn't.
And everyone thought that was hilarious.
Right. So let me just go with a standard Sony sensor, and it's a 12 megapixel sensor.
Andrew?
I'm just going to agree with that because I remember it being a standard Sony sensor.
Well, I
want to
say something different
sensor.
From what you say. My second guess is going to be like 24. Which is dumb.
Which That's one
not,
do you
it's
want?
Definitely not 24.
I don't know. I just remember making fun of it because it was just a regular sensor. And it's like, bro, you're red. Come on.
Yeah. It's a Sony 12 megapixel sensor.
So I don't know who made it. I'm assuming it was Sony.
Yeah.
But it was a dual 12.3 megapixels. 12, so yeah. I'll give you the point for that. 12. Yeah.
Yeah. They're all 12.2 or 12.3. Yeah. Yeah. It was a letdown.
Rough.
Every time I think about that phone, I just get sad. Why did we have so much high hopes for that? All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Waveform Podcast. The Waveform section was quite long. I promise we'll have all kinds of other stuff coming up. But also, I am really excited about one of the next videos we're working on the channel. Spoiler alert, it's not an EV. It's very, very different.
We're replacing Tim.
It's something along those lines. That's all you need to know. But thanks for listening this week. Tune back in next week, and we appreciate you. May the 4th be with you. If you're listening to this late, which is clearly, you can't listen to it on the 4th because we're recording it on the 4th.
So Adam, may the 4th be with you.
Happy Cinco de Mayo. Happy whatever holidays are coming up. Thanks for listening. Catch you guys in the next one. Peace.
Waveform is produced by Adam Molina. We are partnered with Vox Media, and our intro outro music was created by Vane Sill.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.